Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It is the Anfield Wrap after Hull City 2, Liverpool 0. And in front of me I've got Rob Gutman, Joel Richards and Paul Senior prepared to put themselves all through it again after they were there on Saturday.
Thanks very much for the invite. Yeah.
I'll start with you, Paul. That was quite the kick in the teeth.
Yeah, it was. And I've since walking off the ground to sort of sitting down to do the show, I've tried my very best to put it out of my mind. I can normally sit there after defeats and sort of take what the other side have done to stop us playing and whatnot and go, well, you know, we could have done this better, we could have done that better. And quite frankly, I didn't see anything of Hull that we shouldn't have just beaten. I don't want to disrespect Hull fans, and they are good for their win, but Liverpool should never have played football at that level. And how can I put it? We're out of the title race now, where you maybe could have been in it if things would have happened in the Arsenal Chelsea game and whatnot. So that's a kick because of how good we were earlier on in the season, and the difference is just unbelievable.
And yeah, I can only jump on that, Paul. What's annoying me more than anything is because what it seems to me, in some of these defeats, we're getting dragged down to the opposition's level. Like, we're not going in with this, you know, this inferior complex where we're thinking we should go and beat these games. We should be confident going, we'll batter them today. But we're getting dragged down to their level. We're getting scrappy. We're not really creating any chances. We're struggling to break teams down.
But on that, though, Joel, you know, the manager said, when he came in, first interview, he says, you know, we're going to play some sides, and when we play sides who are better than us, we'll drag them down to our level and we'll kill them. That's what he said. It's one of the quotes that everyone remembers from his first press conference. At the minute, what's striking me watching this Liverpool team is that it's not that we're just completely acquiescing to that level. You know, it's the same against Swansea. The first half against Swansea was as bad as for me as the first half against Hull, and they've got loads and loads of things in common. We allow the opposition to get some hope and we just get dragged down to their level. We just don't appear to be able to play with any intensity whatsoever up against these sides. I mean, why do you think that is?
I honestly don't know. Like, because it's the same players, it's the same formation, it's the same system. So I don't know what's gone wrong in the meantime. Okay, everyone can point to injuries, everyone can point to arguably our best player going off to the African Cup of Nations, but I just can't put my finger on it. It's just maybe a malaise that's set in and one that we haven't got out quick enough, and it's manifesting now into 1-10.
We don't seem to be the team that's going to score the first goal in these games. We're now level dips. I think Chelsea, United, City, they can all have a bad first half hour. Or first half hour where they don't make a rubbish team look rubbish. But when I've been watching them, they're tending, I know this is a broad generalisation, but it feels this way recently. They don't tend to be making the first bad rick of the game. That's not that what this game hangs on, but it is an element of this, and we're doing it too often. I was just talking before the show, was it to you, Joel, about Middlesbrough?
Yeah.
Middlesbrough, we go there just before Christmas, and we don't have a really very good first half hour there. They have a couple of half chances. The ball's coming in a lot, but we're quite solid. We haven't had a great run, but we haven't had a terrible run. There's a degree of confidence there. We stay solid. We eventually make a chance.
We look like we're going to score the first goal at Middlesbrough. I think that's what you're sort of driving at.
Yes.
We look like we're going to score the first goal.
Yes, exactly. And you have a confidence that when we do, everything will be right after that. And against Hull, I thought we were pretty poor, but I wasn't sitting there growling and upset. And it was almost, and it was a surprise when they scored. It was a surprise, but what's really poor is that our reaction, and it's, you know, I know we'll go on to discuss that goal and whether, just how bad a goal it was to concede.
No, we can discuss it now, Phil.
But my first point I want to make is our reaction to the goal, and now is becoming our reaction. Well, okay. Our reaction to goals in these kind of games, the way we react to Swansea, it's not good, and that's the worrying thing. And now we've crossed the sort of Rubicon into bona fide crisis territory. It's not fans who are getting upset and aerated now. They're not just being hysterical here. This is dangerous territory for a club that's supposed to be on the rise.
There is a point here, though, which is that I thought the idea that we just accept it, I thought that was there from 15. I'll be honest, I thought from 15, 20, I'm watching this going, this is just more of the same. I thought that there was too many players on the pitch, and there's a couple of exceptions, and we'll come on to talk about them possibly, but I thought, Rob, there was too many players on the pitch who looked like they were going, oh, it's another one of these, is it?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I mean, you know...
And then it felt like we were almost waiting for our mistake, if you sort of know what I mean. And then Shan gives the corner away. And as soon as Shan gives it away, I'm thinking, oh, you know what normally happens when we've done something absolutely stupid like that?
Yeah.
We get like, punished to the nth degree. And that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at a gang of lads who, as I say, before the first goal has even been conceded, who looked like they were going, oh, it's another one of these days.
Well, if we're fatalistic about it, you know, it's not a small stretch to say they'll be getting into this mindset too. And that's not say one we're, it's our fault in any way, but...
It's definitely not mine.
And it's definitely not mine. Jesus Christ, we've gone enough journeys here for these Reds. We need a bit better now. No, but I know what you mean. And look, the overall performance was a pile of shit. I just think if you've won the previous couple of games, I think you go behind in that game and you respond. But we're in a deep, dark funk, and it now requires some radical surgery to get us out of it. But I don't think we can hide from the fact that goals change games, however badly you're playing, and you don't need to give the opposition a 1-0 lead.
No, and you're right. And the annoying thing is that I thought I was seeing little green shoots come out of Liverpool in the Chelsea game where you thought, well, actually, this is the level that we're at, and maybe this is the game we need to sort of reinvigorate us ahead of Hull. You go and dispose of Hull, then you go straight into Tottenham. And Hull was almost like, how can I put it? It's the game that was sort of sandwiched two massive games, isn't it? So you thought to yourself, I hadn't even really focused on the Hull game when looking at the fixtures, that I thought, you've got Chelsea, then Tottenham, and you just go and beat Hull. And I hope, you know, I'm allowed to think like that, I'm a fan, you know, but I'd hope to think that the footballers haven't done that, where they've got, we'll put everything into Chelsea, but we'll be at 30, 40% against Hull and still win, and then go to Tottenham at 100%.
I'll be honest though, I was very pessimistic because I'd looked at our record at Hull. We've only ever won there once in the league, and that was our first visit. And then just the way everything was tying up, you know, we'd only won 1-9 going into it. Hull had won, I think it was like the last three, maybe four home games in a row. They got the good points at Man United last Wednesday. So I knew they were no mugs and that they were on a little bit of a crest of a wave at the moment. Mm. But still, that doesn't excuse the fact that in that first half, that performance, like what you said, it's like same again here. You are watching the same things. There's no like, they're not getting their defence isn't getting penetrated. We're not taking control of the ball and dominating the game. They're looking very scrappy and just looking to get one on the break, which they did, and fair play to them. And it's just the same old. And now it's just getting to a point where you know what's coming, and it's getting annoying. And I'm fed up of coming out of games going, God, what we deserved there.
On this, let's do the goals, and then they're out the way, in a sense, Rob. The first one, it's a terrible, ludicrous, ridiculous concession of a corner. But then it's just a corner. Corners happen all the time. I mean, you know, we had, I think the last count was 743 of them in the second half. And corners happen all the time, and sides defend them all the time. Everybody's dreadful. The goalkeeper, by a mile, the most dreadful in a pretty woeful list of lads.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I haven't watched it back. I was right behind the goal, saw the ball come in and almost was about to turn away because it looked such a clear claim for the keeper, or at least to have dispatched it in some way. So I don't even know where I'd begin to blame the others around it, because I don't think their errors can compare, because his was a routine one. He'd seen it coming. He's the tallest man in the box by dint of being able to use his hands. It was his to win. I know, you know, I'm part of the large fraternity that has a downer on Simon Mignolet, and I agree with anyone who wants to say he's been in really good form since he came back in. But he remains, as Jamie Carragher said in some of his aftermatch stuff, he remains an indecisive example of a goalkeeper. And it's that indecision, that something in the split second that holds him back in certain situations. There are moments when he's not, when he's a reflex keeper, and he can make the odd stop that genuinely takes your breath away. But
makes a very good save second half.
Yeah, and I think I turned to Paul at that point and goes, I'm not arsed. I'm not arsed with his good save that redeems him after he's let in the first. It's like Chelsea.
It doesn't redeem him.
I'm not arsed him about his penalty save, quite frankly. Okay, I know it was nice not to have lost that game. But I'm not arsed about that because he fucked around for that first goal against Chelsea. And it was part of his indecisiveness. He took twice as long as I ever see anyone need to set a wall up. I was seeing them, even before the ref blew the whistle against Chelsea, he sort of harked back to that and going, what's he dicking around doing? This is done. Just get on with the game. It felt like it's got to be about him too much. And too much of, I don't know. It's almost like he doesn't want to be a goalkeeper because it's not enough. There's not enough focus on you if you're a goalie.
Saves at 0-0 or cash in the bank in goalkeepers. But when you've caused a 1-0 deficit, they can't. It's not cash in the bank because Hull can set up their game completely differently at 1-0. Liverpool can't get going anyway, but they're never going to get in against the side with 11 men behind the ball at 1-0. So what he does second half is not pointless, but you know, there's no credit go to him for it. However he responds, he always responds. I don't see Simon Mignolet. He makes a blunder and his head's down for the rest of the game. You see Simon Mignolet make a blunder and then go back to his normal self, but he'll go make another blunder either the week after or week after. This is how he is, you know. So, I mean, we knew what we were getting where we got to a point with Karius where Karius simply couldn't continue because he was making more than one mistake a game at one point. And then you bring Mignolet back in and you know nine shots out of ten he'll be fine for them, but then something may happen.
And now I'm sure the question is going to be asked. We're going to probably touch on it lately in terms of who's underperforming. But when you look at Mignolet now, you look at what Karius did against West Ham and against Bournemouth, is now the right time to debate whether Mignolet gets dropped for Saturday's game against Tottenham? I think it's a fair question in my eyes.
I do think he should, because if you drop Karius for making a couple of mistakes, then you've got to go, well, if he's training well and you've been happy with his previous performances, you've then got to go, well, I give you the chance, Simon, to establish yourself as number one. You haven't taken it. I'm going to give Karius another go. And then if Karius does the same, you go, Simon's playing well in training, blah, blah. That's what my point was at the time with Karius. It was, what's the point in having a second choice goalkeeper and competition for the goalkeeping place if you're making consistent mistakes, which he made one against Chelsea and he's now made one against Hull? You've got to then bring the other lads in. The problem we've got is that everyone was talking that we need left backs and centre halves and strikers in January, and we were very chilled about the goalkeeping position. You know, you get to the first week in February and our heads have fell off again and there's nothing we can do. I don't know what the situation with Danny Ward is, whether you could have recalled him or not. I didn't know whether that would have been the worst thing in the world, just because for a fresh option around the place. Or you could literally go and sign a goalkeeper. I was saying yesterday, I do want a long-term solution for the goalkeeping position, but there's older goalkeepers out there that you can go and pick up for not that much money. We in January, especially at the beginning of it, had a lot still to play for.
Have any of our rivals dropped points due to their goalkeepers' performances? I mean, that's an honest question because I don't watch them as closely, but I can't think of the media focusing on
Manchester City.
Man City.
Oh, Bravo.
Week.
Sorry, Bravo. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, that.
And now they've dropped Bravo.
Manchester. Also, Cech was shite against Chelsea. He was bloody rubbish.
I have not seen it.
He was rubbish.
Well, okay, that's what I'm trying to do. It's an honest question. I'm trying to get in perspective. No,
I mean, not as consistently, I don't think. I mean, Bravo's obviously, he was conceding a goal every shot he was conceding at one point, and obviously they brought Caballero in his. I mean, he was he great against us last year in the League Cup final? Do I remember?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he made a couple of good saves.
He's a more than competent deputy, and it probably should have been in a little bit earlier, to be fair to him. But I think you look at Courtois and Lloris.
He's not great for the goal that gets conceded yesterday, though, either, Caballero. But they get away with it because they go make it 2-1.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think everyone talks about like it's this easy fix, the goalkeeping position. I don't think it is.
No.
Really. I mean, you're talking that Claudio Bravo was literally Barcelona's goalkeeper, the best side in the world. I think Real Madrid have struggled since the end of Casillas' career to solve the goalkeeping position. So it's not an easy fix. You know, Man United took the time with De Gea, but they went through about four or five goalkeepers before they got that right. So it's a worry that you go through the same next year, because I'm pretty sure you go and buy a goalkeeper in the summer and who that is. I mean, I was having a conversation with Andy yesterday and he's telling me Butland. I don't think Butland's a big enough step up on Mignolet. I really don't. I don't think that I've seen enough of...
And also, he's literally not played any football this calendar, well, this season.
Yeah, he could be finished. There's tons of goalkeepers around the Premier League who people like Kasper Schmeichel was the talk in the summer. I don't think he's that much better than Mignolet. He makes mistakes. I think everyone just wants a bit of fresh blood in goal. But then after about 3 or 4 months, it's Karius was fresh blood. But you then see their mistakes when you're watching them every week, which we don't see with Lloris, which we don't see with De Gea, whatever.
Well, we seem to be well stocked in goalkeepers at the academy at the moment. You know, there's a lot of good things being raved about. I know they're only 17, 18 years old, a few of them, like Sigurbara and Kelleher and that, which obviously they're going to need another year or two, really. But, you know, look at what you've got.
Shamal George,
too. And obviously Danny Ward's still on loan. You've even got Alex Maniger on the place, for fuck's sake. No one's even talked about him.
Danny, to be fair, I mean, again, this is back to the idea of what you're doing when you're managing a football club, in that you could say bring Danny Ward back. But, for instance, he's starting in Huddersfield, beating Leeds 2-1 yesterday. It's valuable experience for him, you know what I mean? He's at the top end of a championship battle. The question then becomes, if he comes back, does he play every week for us? One.
Yeah, that's sort of my point, where if he is playing well and he's had 6 or 7 months worth of playing well, like when we brought him back from Aberdeen, did he come in and play a game?
He got a couple of league games under his belt.
Yeah, and yeah. I didn't see it.
It took a while though. Everyone was going, why
have
we brought
Bournemouth?
Him back?
Am I right?
Yeah, he plays Bournemouth away, but he took ages and everyone's going, why have we brought him back? Because he couldn't get in.
But what now, I think if he's playing every week, he could literally have just gone, right, recall and go straight into goal. I mean, hindsight.
I'd be interested to see a list, actually, of the world's 20 best goalkeepers. Because we're the ninth richest in the world. I want the ninth best goalie, at least. I mean, maybe that's a bit crude way of putting it. But we haven't said, you know, there's only, say, 7 or 8 better than Mignolet.
Loads of them are bloody rubbish, you know.
Of the top 20?
Of in general, loads.
I agree.
Paul saying it's not, hard. Yeah, it's loads hard, of them. Loads of them are bloody rubbish. And I think that this is, you know, look at the state of whatever I've had in and out of goal this season.
Yeah.
But you would twist, though, wouldn't you, Neil? You would twist rather than stick.
In the summer?
Yeah.
I think that a lot of that's going to depend on what he does with Karius.
Just touching on Robles seems to have been in good form since the derby. Since he's come in, he hasn't looked back. I think his statistics, he's up there with one of the best shot stoppers in the league. Not to be fair, like he's in a bit good form. Yeah. But even last season when he was in, he looked rubbish. So with goalkeepers, it's just pot luck.
To a certain extent, I think that's fair. The second goal is Liverpool are pushing forward, Rob. Go on, Joe.
Oh, I was going to say, what I noticed, that, and one of me and my mates in the ground were talking about it, it seems to be a lot of the time, all it takes to break us down is 3 passes. And I haven't watched the second goal back, but I'm sure off the top of my head it was around 3 passes, ball over the top.
Might only be 2.
Nias just slugs off Matip, bang, and through Mignolet's legs. It was just so easy, and it's getting too easy.
I mean, I was in the other end of the ground, so I just saw the normal thing you see when you're losing 1-0. You see some lads streaking away, and you go, oh, shit, that's my cue to get off. So, but I don't know how it happened. And the only thing I will always say about that killer goal, because we've all seen that killer goal far too many times in our life, that's a consequence of everything you've done before.
Yeah, of course.
That last 20 seconds before that killer goal. I almost can't get motivated to even discuss who was at fault. You know, think down the years. Probably last time we were at Hull and got done, Skirtle fell on his ass as they went through to score one or two more at the end. You've conceded that goal when you haven't scored by 85 minutes.
Yeah, Rob, you're absolutely right. I think the second goal is just consequence of the fact you're throwing 10 men forward and you're leaving one back. Phil Blundell made a really good point to us coming out the ground, actually, that he didn't understand why he didn't bring Moreno on to play centre-half. Hull brought Niasse on and Silva made 3 changes in very quick succession. And I thought, these are doing fine here, why is he making so many changes? But I think he had the second goal in mind. I think he
has the second goal in mind.
The Niasse change is definitely a second goal.
The Niasse change is the idea he might get something on the break. And the other two, he was just changing for legs. Mm. Because this is what I want to talk about when we're talking about the Groundhog Day feel of the whole thing. Is one of the things that struck me was, everyone said afterwards, oh, is it a fitness thing? We look far fitter than Hull. Hull looked goosed to me on about 60, and he's just changing for legs. Yeah. I think even Niasse, I think he's thinking we might get something on a breakaway and he can hold the ball up and he can run channels. But I think he's thinking, I need another pair of legs up there. I thought Hull looked absolutely shattered, apart from the fact that he just didn't have enough to test them and pull them apart.
Yeah, Phil's point was about bringing Moreno on and playing them centre-half to just track Niasse and just literally just be quicker than him and run back, you know, because Liverpool were 9 men against their 11 behind the ball. So I thought that was a really good point. I thought, but Hull have obviously brought in a load of new signings in the January transfer window, and some of them probably didn't have 90 in them. And I thought, fair play to the manager there, because I thought it was quite ballsy making that Niasse change, where he could have just brought on another centre half or something. Liverpool were just getting the ball wide and putting it into absolutely nobody.
That's why I didn't need to bring another centre half on.
We don't get wide properly, though. I mean, we've said this before. We don't get wide with a proper overload. What we do is we all huddle in the middle, and then you end up with Klein out wide with a bit of space because there's a big wall in front of everyone in the middle, and they chuck it out, and then Klein's on his own. Suddenly a couple of lads go towards him, and what's he meant to do? All he can do is try and chuck it in high because he's got three bodies between him and the goal. So he chucks in a high ball, and our lads are too short to deal with centre halves. Was what you have to do, and I don't understand why managers don't. I don't know. It isn't so glaringly obvious in the coaching. You have to overload properly, and you don't just knock it out to Klein. You have three lads in that position so that they can get in behind and get, you know, goal line chalk on their boots, not wide chalk line, goal line chalk. They're in, and the cutback is then a 6-yard ball on the ground, which if can defend, go off a defender's legs into the goal, go off one of your men's legs into the goal. You've got a proper opportunity.
But why
don't they do it?
Why aren't we doing that? If I say this isn't the first time this has happened, I'm saying I'm looking at basically almost every game since the 1st of January. So why?
I don't get it, because to me it's a coaching obvious. I mean, I remember watching the City sides that won the league when they've been at their best. They had the likes of Zabaleta and Milner and one other, usually Silva. They'd overload in those positions and they'd end up putting those flat balls across the 6-yard box. Why we don't do it, I don't know.
Maybe are we trying to do it? Do you think we're trying to do it? Do you think there's too many of them? Do you think they're blocking it off? I'm asking you the questions.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the alternate instruction is. I mean, maybe we've got into this habit of that we're this pressing team that plays at tempo, so therefore what it is it's bang it into feet on the half turn in central positions, and we've got too much trust in our own ability, and when it worked, it worked. And maybe when we were that bit quicker into the press and we had half a yard more.
We were doing more of this sort of stuff that you're describing earlier in the season.
The overload.
Yeah. For instance, you've mentioned the Middlesbrough game. What is the Middlesbrough game's second goal, possibly the best goal we've scored this season as a team move? What is that but what you've just described?
Manny gets taken down.
They're not that much higher up the pitch, Rob.
They're not in a block. They're not in a low block, though. I'm talking purely about against a low block. They're going to go, we don't give a fuck.
To be fair to that point, I mean, Middlesbrough are one of the best defensive side in the leagues as well. And Liverpool, I think Liverpool was 1 and 2 touch passing. That was pulling sides apart at then. Yes. Where now we dwell on the ball, think about it, go left to right. Liverpool used to go forward, and they'd only go side to side when knocking it round a man. It was triangles and lovely intricate play. There's none of that zippy football. Don't get me wrong, you couldn't play zippy football on that pitch the other day. It was a farmer's field. Mm. And Liverpool couldn't get a passing game going really if they wanted to. So, and I mean, don't get me wrong, the way to beat a side that's sitting behind the ball is to get the ball wide, try and pull them in and get a late runner.
Yeah.
But the service was shocking, whether it's Klein, whether it was, I mean, I noticed when Coutinho was going in field, Chan was going left the other day. I mean, the wide areas are a real problem. I think Klopp knows that moving forward, but is in-game substitutions.
We'll come on to that in a minute.
Yeah, I was going to say, they were appalling. But I just felt the game could have been helped second half by someone with a bit more, who could have speeded up passing a little bit. I couldn't believe when Alden never seen minutes the other day.
Do we make any chances apart from that Coutinho one, which he blazed?
Go on.
Kupovic made the great save off Mane.
One off Henderson. There was the header off Mane, when it looks like he's lost it. There's the big one off Henderson. There's the Coutinho error. There's a few where it's moving around the box a fair bit, and you're thinking it just needs to bounce for us and something can happen. There's a couple where, for instance, they don't feel like chances because they haven't met the keeper, but they've thrown good blocks in Hull.
Yeah.
But there's not enough.
No.
And that's the killer. And that's where when I'm saying it's like Groundhog Day, Joel, put it in my piece, that this is... Second half, Liverpool do exactly what Hull want them to do. And all the Liverpool players are going, this isn't working. This is what's killing me watching it, is all the Liverpool players in themselves are going, it's one of these again, this isn't going to work, and yet they're doing it anyway. They're doing what Hull want.
Yeah, and the more that they dwell on the ball, the more that the opposition are ganging up on our lads, and then you're seeing Coutinho or Mane or Milner or whoever's out on, whether it's the left or right flank, because they're dwelling on the ball. The opposition can get set then. They can get out to the players. They can have two or three around them, and then you're trying to find holes in what has essentially become a 10-man defence. you're trying to work around that. It's not happening, and the slower you get, the more chances you're going to get broken down, and it's not going to get to anything. And even when we're trying to have that rally, when we're 1-0 down, it's not enough. It's not persistent enough. We're not being quick enough in terms of testing the keeper. Your keeper, if it's there, he's only made two real saves. Let's be kind. Like, let's be generous about it in terms of, like, no, the serious chances that we have. And that's in any other game as well. We're not working the keepers hard enough, whether it's through long-range shots or even trying to get into the box and stretching them.
I wonder if we may, and I hope I'm right in this one for now anyway, we'll come back to look at this spell and go, it's no coincidence that Liverpool suffered when they were playing two games in a week, because we stopped being able to work on stuff, and that's been the hallmark of when things have worked under this manager. Now, this is, in making that statement, that's a good thing and a bad thing, obviously, because you'd hope with a full week we can produce a performance, and the attention to detail will have been there. But obviously, football doesn't work like that long run. We have to be able to play two games in a week. But I'm just looking at little things like, Joel, like, for example, like our set pieces. They seem to have gone awry in the last few weeks. Where there was getting to be a point where it felt like we'd worked on our set pieces. Our corners looked more decent. We were becoming a bit of a threat. I mean, you can even hark back to Palace where we score two from set pieces. Suddenly, I think, you know, when Moreno's been on, he suddenly takes them and it feels ad hoc. They couldn't work out when it was time for a short corner, a long corner. They can't work out when they're just going to just knock it in the middle of the park, or they're going to try and bend one in like every team does against us. I don't know. The attention to detail doesn't look like it's there to me.
No, and even in the Watford game, Mane's first is off a corner, isn't it? Like a short way corner. We did the short way corner for a bit Saturday. Didn't come to anything. Milner puts in swingers. It's either going straight to the keeper or it's not even beating the first man. Mm. And
does the one Chan get his head on? Which for me, we told everything. Chan gets his head on it. Their keeper fumbles it.
Oh, yeah.
And we do nothing. No one's near it. No one's gambled. Mm. Everyone's presumed nothing's going to come of it. And that's what's killing me watching this Liverpool side, is they've all presumed, oh, well, it's not going to make any odds anyway. So no one does what their lads do.
Under the keeper's nose.
Get as close to the keeper as you can. See if there's any scraps, any bits. No one's doing that in a Liverpool shirt. When Liverpool are actually winning the occasional header and flick on, it's not just in this game. Everyone just presumes, well, he's not going to win that, so I'm not even going to bother making me run. And then he does win it, and then suddenly someone reacts, but by then it's too late. And that's what you're watching. You're watching a load of lads who've just lost faith in what they're doing and what they're about. And when I say a load, I think there's a couple who were especially problematic. I think that, you know, for instance, it's Firmino who's closest to that one that comes off the keeper, but he's not anticipating it. He's not gambling on it the way in which he was gambling on stuff earlier in the season and being able to get the pieces. And, you know, this is where, for me, I'm watching a side, Paul, that if it plays well, it's got all the presence in the world up top. If it doesn't play well, there's no presence up top, and that's what we've been seeing as well.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because, in a side that is fluid and to what I was talking about before, just passing the ball around the opposition and they can't get near you, it's quick and it's full of confidence. Firmino's the most fantastic player to spearhead that. But then sometimes when you've got games like this, you go, well, he's not a striker, is he? He is a striker. He is a striker in the Liverpool side that's fluid and firing, but he's not. He then doesn't look a striker that can go and affect two reasonably decent centre halves. Who's the Renocchia's one centre half? The other centre half,
Maguire.
Yeah, they're two decent centre halves at Hull now, and I just it's not that it's not the game for Firmino. It's the game for Firmino if it's open. But when they're a closed shop because of what happens with giving the goal away, you may as well not play with them there. So, I mean, Sturridge comes on and
there's no additional presence.
No, it doesn't change anything. And it really should change something. And that maybe is why he does go to Origi next, because he can see the Sturridge substitution hasn't worked. But, I mean, these substitutions are there to change games. And in previous years, they would change games, but at the moment it's just adding nothing.
The biggest problem we've got at the moment, when you're out chasing the game, you think, right, get Sturridge and Origi on, we'll try and batter them and have a go. But the main problem is, at the moment, you're bringing on two strikers who are essentially shot shy. They're not in form. Like the rest of the team, they're not in great form at the moment, so you're bringing them on, trying to expect them to perform miracles. It's not happening. I could tell as soon as the pair of them come on Saturday, I thought, this isn't going to change anything. It's set in stone what's going to happen here today. We've lost the game. As soon as I knew that 1-0 down, and like you're relying on them two to come on and try and make a difference, it's not happening.
Yeah, they're broken, those two. And that's who that's an indictment of beyond themselves as individuals, I don't know. But they look utterly broken. We can curse our luck, but It's not our job. You know, there's a job of a team behind the team there to get them up. And they're both hugely talented players. But we were saying this, we said on other recent shows, who were the stars of the last 3 months of what was quite a decent end to last season?
Origi certainly won.
Origi, Emre Can, and Daniel Sturridge scores 10 in 11 games or something like that. And can't even be first pick because Origi's doing so well. These are the stars of that period, even eclipsing Coutinho, mercurial moments.
Interesting that not one of them starts the season in the 11 as first choice. Can, it's months until Can really comes back in. Sturridge is very much on the periphery from day one. Origi, he doesn't start at Tottenham. He comes on ahead of Sturridge at Tottenham, doesn't he? Yeah. So it was interesting that was the case, and I don't dispute it, but the manager almost in the summer doesn't fancy them as first 11 players. And I don't think any of them have recovered from that. I don't think Chan's had an appalling season from the get-go. Origi he scored goals around Christmas. He had a flurry, but I think his performances were poor, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, there was conversations we were having on the shows where we go, yes, he's scoring goals, but looks like a problem. And then you go, well, Sturridge wasn't fit, and he was really unlucky at the timing of his injury where he would have been playing ahead of Origi. But then, since he's come back, I don't know what it is. He just doesn't. It's like he can't let himself go again because he's scared again.
He's protecting his body. Yeah. It feels.
Right. Don't. To be fair to Can, I do agree with you on the whole. He's had a poor season, but there was a few games around the end of October, early November, where I thought he's coming into a bit of form. He got a couple of goals against Palace and Watford, and I thought
he got three, didn't he, in that period?
Bournemouth,
that belter.
Yeah. So I thought, maybe he is snapping out of it, but then he's regressed again, and he's probably the main player. If anyone's regressed under Klopp, it's him. Unfortunately, Sturridge wholeheartedly agree. He just doesn't look the same player at all. Whose goals per game ratio was fantastic at one point.
And you see, we're feeling this loss because we've touched on Firmino already. Because two big players for me aren't giving it. Firmino and Adam Lallana lately. Coutinho we can come on to because I know he's not the full Coutinho, but at least there is some mitigation here. But Firmino and Lallana, they're not terrible at the moment, but they're just not influencing games the way they were.
Coutinho was very bad, though, at the weekend. Like, he was worse than the other two that you're mentioning. I know there's mitigating circumstances.
I couldn't see much daylight between them, but OK, I'll accept that. But I suppose, in a way, Park Coutinho because we can at least see a way forward. I was with Lallana and Firmino. I wonder if it's about they need a 3 weeks off or something, that their legs have gone, because those were the two hardest working players in the team in that early phase of the season.
Do they look tired to you?
They don't. I didn't know. They're athletes, so they're not going to be sitting with.
No,
that. They're not
going to
be Joe Cole type tired. Blowing and things like they don't look that tired, but they've lost their edge, and I think there's a chance that's physical.
I think it's a mental thing, to be honest. I think with Firmino, Firmino especially, to me, it looks like
he's had some problems, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Off the pitch as well, and I'm not talking just the drink driving. He had a break in his home, so he moves out of the family home into an apartment, gets done for drink driving that night, the night before Christmas, and hasn't come back really since. I mean, he had a decent 20 minutes against Swansea where he scores twice. But I think the 70 either side of that, he's pretty poor. I'm not going to point the finger at Firmino for being a problem, because I think when Liverpool click, he really clicks.
But it's back to the idea of, and this is what I'm sort of beginning to drive at when I'm asking you who's underperforming, and feel free to throw other names in, Paul.
But
it feels like, it feels, and I'm about to ask this question later on, it feels as though Liverpool have got to play well to win. And I think Firmino is a massive part of that. That Liverpool have got to play well to win. And there's lots of sides that don't have to play well to win. And Liverpool, this Liverpool side at the minute, like, I've got a question later on, but I'll ask it you now that I was going to throw at you later on. Literally, when was Liverpool's last undeserved league victory? Where you've gone, you know what, we've got away with one there, but fair play to the Reds.
Part of me thought it was Man City. But City didn't do enough to cause
problems.
It's
a tight game between two good sides. What I mean is, one way you go, we've got out of jail with 3 points. Genuinely.
I think, do you know what I'd go back to? It depends. Because they're totally undeserved. But Sunderland at home, where we deserve to win. But in that way that Chelsea can be a bit crap and win one.
That was one of the performances I was most proud of. Sunderland, I remember coming out of it. Because, we've got to wait for the goal. I think Origi scores quite late on in the game. And then we score in the 90th minute or something, and it was almost about grinding out a performance you maybe didn't you did deserve to win, but you've had to really work for it. And I always call them the sort of results of champions, because that was the mindset we were in. The results that the likes of Manchester United would get. You think back to people like Makeda and stuff like that, and they really, they dig you out of a hole. But
and he was a sub coming on doing that, wasn't he, Origi, that day?
Was he?
Yeah,
he comes in and bends one in from 25 yards. Yeah, well, look what we've got off the bench.
Definitely. But I don't think that one's undeserved.
But you see that in the general positivity of the club. But no, whether it's not undeserved, it's still...
Would you say Swansea away?
Even Swansea, I mean, Swansea away, maybe we go 1-0 down, but we're great for 25 minutes, second half. We go 2-1 up and we're great.
Are we saying Dortmund then?
Well, no, I mean, I've said in the league, because this is my point that I'm sort of trying to drive at here, where we're talking about sort of either both who's underperforming, but also in general, is that there is you shouldn't have to play well to win. Like, every week, that's unsustainable to have to play well to win. And there's a couple of issues in there where I think, for instance, you can refer to, you know, conceding a first soft goal in a game. But even there, what would have happened if a Hull player, if Huddleston got out from under his feet from 25 yards on the 40th minute and just put a top in and it's unstoppable? The same thing would have happened, is my point. My point is that there isn't a fallback. This is how we just dig ourselves out, boys, through sheer force of will. That doesn't look like it's there at the minute. And it's not looked like it's there for a while. And that's what I'm driving at here.
Was it a problem that was always there, or has it become a self-fulfilling prophecy because the results haven't happened and we've spiralled into lack of confidence? That you can't, out of all the factors, lack of confidence is always the biggest in these situations. It's what triggers the process that makes that come to the fore. The reason we don't react at Hull against Hull is because of a lack of confidence. It's not they suddenly don't have ability in themselves, and it's the lack of reaction that's the problem. As you said, anyone can put one in the top bin from 30 yards against you. You don't see that coming. It has to be about what you do from there. Swansea, actually, Ash is a prime example in many ways. We're not playing well at Swansea. They maybe could have scored before they do score. They maybe could get second one before we score, but we find a way. We click into life, we have 20, we purr like the oil machine we'd look like, we do the job, get two goals, okay, bit lucky in the last minute, but we do the job, we find the phase in the game, whereas that just looked like a game I've seen on Saturday, I've seen so many times down the years.
The wins at Arsenal and Chelsea, there was a bit of, you know, the last 20 minutes, a bit 20
minutes
in both of them games,
we dig in both,
backs to the wall. They have a few
but
chances.
But we deserve to win.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And that was like the sort of games where
my point is, Joel, is that we click. So in both of those games, there's a period of time where you're able to go, Liverpool have clicked and they played really well. I think what I'm driving at here is in Swansea we click. Even against Sunderland, we're in the process of clicking as it wears on. Maybe that's a bit of an exception and maybe that's the game I'm trying to think of. But broadly speaking, what I'm trying to say is, in all the other games that you're all mentioning, there's a point where Liverpool are pairing, and that's the point where they take the game away from the opposition. My point is that you've got to be able to score two goals without pairing, and we just don't look like we've got that in us, and we haven't looked like we've got that in us for a long time. But Tottenham get a penalty.
Yeah, they do, but...
We should have had a penalty. But if you want to go down that route, I think the first half, it's a handball and it's a penalty.
I haven't seen that.
It's a handball and it's a penalty for me. It's 8 yards away from him and his hands out. Now you can say it's ball to hand as much as you want, and that his hand's just there, but he can get it out the way and he chooses not to.
It's
travelled 8 yards. 8 yards it goes from the when he gets a deflection to when it hits him. It's a penalty.
Shame for City though as well. They can see the goal with 7 minutes to go, and you're thinking they've got more points here. Swansea are going to get a deserved draw, but then they just rally. And like 92nd minute, whatever, you know, the new lads gets another goal.
They're a little bit like, I mean, I saw that injury. They're not all, they sort of get hit back almost straight away, City, and it's a bit of a, it's a lack of concentration by Swansea, I think, at that stage. I don't think City weren't quite doing an Alex Ferguson Man U job. They didn't have to because actually they get the second back so quickly. I mean, these are these points where you sometimes look at the hand of fate and go, have we been a little unlucky? It feels like, and I think the overall answer is no, but...
And I think the overall answer might be yes, but you've still got to play better.
Yeah.
You've got to look like you've got a solution, because I agree with you. I actually wrote in my piece at the weekend, I think there's a couple of bits at the weekend where you can say we're a little unlucky. For instance, the one where it does bounce off their keeper. He fumbles from a corner. Our keeper fumbles from a corner. Blah, blah, blah. But the other side of that, though, is, but their lads are buying a ticket. And where I'm annoyed with our boys is our boys aren't buying enough tickets. Make your own luck, but we have been a bit unlucky as well.
Am I right saying we should have had a few pens lately? It feels like we have. I know you one bleats more and focuses on these when you're not getting results. There's the guy who puts his shoulder stroke top of his arm out the other week. What game was that? Was that Swansea?
Yeah, there's been bits.
There's been lots of bits.
There's been bits, but then we're coming back to the idea that there's no one screaming at the referee.
Chelsea goal is one we should have screamed at the referee over. I mean, I know there's all kinds of interpretations though on the free kick, but I couldn't believe. I didn't see a mass campaign. He should have been surrounded.
United's equaliser. A man offside, up to the goal. You know, it is little things like that, but then you counterbalance it with, well, do we really deserve anything from any of them performances? Or, you know, I'm not talking about Man United in particular, but the games where we have lost, like yourself, Hampton's, where, well, we didn't really do enough to win. But it does feel like these little incidents happen, and that's when you're screaming blue murder, but none of our players are in the faces, the shrinking violets for me.
And the thing is, when you do scream, I mean, I'd like to do a study on it one day, but it feels like the team that screams blue murder doesn't get that decision or the next one, but it gets the third one. I think this almost happens at Bournemouth.
It's pressure, isn't it? The referees will feel a bit guilty if they don't give one. They've got to play it a little bit, a percentage game. Man United were the best at it for years. Mm. They would scream and scream and scream until they got the decision they wanted. Remember the Andy Dersow thing in the corner where they chase him left, right and centre? You can't do that quite as much anymore. But, you know, get at the referee. Liverpool, the thing that Liverpool are too friendly has been labelled so many times, and it's right, they are too nice.
It was being labelled, I want to be clear about this, it was being labelled at the Benitez side, that had Carragher, Gerrard, Alonso, Mascherano. They used to get told they were too friendly.
Well, they were a gang of bastards compared to these, weren't they?
Well, but no one to talk to the referee. I mean, what I'm saying is that all this, because this is back to the idea of focus on the game, boys. You can't change the referee's decision, so on and so forth. That's what used to happen, and I remember sitting around with, like, I mean, it's interesting at the minute because all the old debates come up. I remember in 2007, people didn't want Gerrard to be our captain anymore. Loads of people did not want Gerrard to be our captain anymore because he wasn't vocal enough and he didn't get in the referee's face.
Yeah. But then you've got Carragher on the pitch who looks like that natural fella who would go and do that.
How often are we there or thereabouts in the Fair Play League?
Yeah, well...
Always?
There is always this. And don't get me wrong, I would prefer to have the, you know, Liverpool Man United of the 90s versus the Barcelona Real Madrid image. I'd much rather be the Barcelona, the clean football, the lovely brand, rather than Real Madrid with their Pepes and the Jose Mourinho's flicking people in the ear. I'd rather that.
Yeah, sure.
If you're winning.
I'd just rather win and whatever it takes to win.
It's sport. Win at all costs, you know.
We all get to shake hands afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
But all of this, sort of, I think... There's a little bit of pressure on the manager. This isn't to Rob to allow the notion that anyone's mooting any significant idea that there should be a change or anything like that. Even talking about contracts to me is utterly ridiculous. But there'll be the self-imposed pressure. He wants to win. He wants to get some results. And I'm looking at him, and there's a few markers that, to me, he's chosen not to go into the market, which is something that he's quite solidly done through his career, that he doesn't really entertain much in January. Just look back at his record at Dortmund.
Okay.
Go on.
Well, we did one of those gutter shows near the end of the window in one of Klopp's press conferences near the end of the window. You did get a sense of maybe, well, they certainly did go into the market. They just weren't successful in the market. Now, you can ask a question over how much did the manager push for his desires or how much was it pushed? Were these things pushed for him? But we know for a fact from a number of credible journalists that Draxler was considered, and he wouldn't have just been on a whim. We know that they would have put bids in for Pulisic and Brandt. So they did try and go into the market, and I'm not trying to straight away deflect from the manager and go, it has to be therefore the owner's fault, because maybe the manager picked unrealistic targets along with the director of football. I don't know, but I'm not sure we can label that one at him. I was ready to label that one.
You don't think you can label this one at him?
That he didn't want to go into the market?
That he wasn't certainly... What I mean by that, Rob, we're not prepared to compromise to go into the market, because it seems crystal clear he wasn't prepared to compromise to go into the market.
His policy is visible through Teixeira the January before. He knows
possibly
what he's willing to pay, and I think he's got his own... I don't want to label it like stubbornness, but I think there's a shade of stubbornness in him where he goes, that's his value. If you don't get him at that, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it cost you on the football pitch a little bit, you know, where maybe it's an extra £5 million. I know, you know, Chelsea lost Ashley Cole over £5,000 a week. Sorry, Arsenal lost them over £5,000 a week. You can lose big things in football through that.
Maybe he didn't fight hard enough with the board with who he wanted.
The Premier League,
it's crystal clear, Rob. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, or maybe it's not crystal clear, but I think it seems... If we, again, off the same trusted journalist's notion that you've nailed there, that Liverpool weren't prepared to compromise on their targets in January.
Liverpool?
Yeah, Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp.
led by Jurgen Klopp,
the collective,
were not prepared to compromise on their targets in January.
Yeah,
like, they wanted the lads they wanted. If they couldn't get them, they didn't want anyone.
Look, if
is that or is that not the case in your view?
Yeah, it is. As a broad guesstimate.
So,
no, Neil, come on, don't try.
I'm not. I'm just trying to. I need to move the conversation along. I don't want to sit here and talk about transfers. My point is.
But you're not necessarily right, though. You're trying to make a point. You're not necessarily right because you're talking about what happens behind closed doors. That the club reached a broad consensus that they all signed up to in front of the media. You're right about. They'll get exasperated. You don't know that Jurgen Klopp didn't bang his fist on a table. And go, please, for God's sake, can't we pay 25 for Pulisic? And when they turned him down, he said, "Okay, I won't make a fuss about it in public." You can't say that. You don't know.
Okay. Is it reasonable? Is it reasonable to say that he did it, therefore, when if he wasn't being given £25 million for Pulisic and he couldn't sort Draxler out for whatever reason, that he didn't compromise and choose to go and get, I don't know, just a fresh pair of legs somewhere and think, you know what, that's what I'll do. I'll make the pragmatic choice.
I just thought...
We may as well just be here now all day. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick... No, I just think that he knew in his mind that he wasn't going to buy anyone and that was it, and I'll end it there.
So, therefore... What I'm trying to say when I'm discussing the manager being under a bit of pressure is he's always been reluctant throughout his history to buy in January. We can see that through the fact that he very rarely buys in January. That it looks like we can be 80% sure he wasn't prepared to compromise on that sort of stuff. So he's gone through this sort of... And now I'm talking about this endlessly. And what I'm trying to drive at here is, are there a few markers of other patterns that you've seen in Dortmund? For instance, in his bad season, when he was coming up against deep defences and set pieces, Rob?
In his last season in Dortmund, well, I've read some stuff this morning, actually, from fans and journalists who watched and said that was exactly what happened in that last season, is that they came up against set pieces and they had injuries to strikers, and this is precisely what happened. I mean, whether you want to see that season as half empty or half full is another question altogether, because they had a disastrous 6 months, I would say, where they were in the relegation zone, and they don't turn it till the February, and then they pull it back and they end up finishing about sixth. But is this a market? But it's being portrayed as, is this a Klopp thing? Well, I mean, how many years was he at Dortmund? Quite a number of times. I think there's plenty of times to find out that he liked to gegenpress and that if you sat deep against a Klopp side, you might have a chance of keeping them out. I'm sure it didn't take the rest of the league five years to work that one out. Do you think?
My point is more, and what I'm trying to drive at, and what I've been trying to drive at, is the notion of freshening. That there's not.
Sake.
I would love to.
But not just in terms of buying people, I'm saying in terms of the way in which you're approaching football Tuffish. Matches. Every aspect of this, Rob, and that's what I was trying to drive at and why I didn't want to get bogged down into a transfer thing. That there's no history that he's got of choosing to freshen, of thinking, you know what, we've hit this point, I could do with just maybe changing one or two little things. That's what I'm trying to drive at, is that it's the same approach, we're watching it go through the same issues and come to the same conclusions and have it fail in the same way of too many crosses being lumped into the box. Where, for instance, what he doesn't do is address the cross issue by playing a more conventional number nine on the one hand, or address the crossing issue by saying, lads, if you just cross it more than 30 times and a half, which Liverpool did, I'm going to fine you all a week's wages, as an extreme example. Mm. What I'm driving at, Rob, is the freshening point, and that's why I didn't want to get bogged down in transfers. It is that it becomes tough to find a way through if what you say to your team is, during the summer, all the way through, I'm committed to you, we're committed to our process, we're committed to our style, we commit, and then if it suddenly doesn't work, from a managerial point of view, to walk in and say, we're going to have 3 weeks of doing something completely different, is really, really hard. One way you can do that to a certain extent is by freshening it in the market, you can do it on the training pitch. What I'm trying to say is, this is why it's tough to find a way through.
Yeah, you're saying he's not a plan B manager in many respects. He has to resolutely stick with his plan A. That's almost his ethos. It's an asset, and now it's proving a liability. Well, we're seeing it enacted as a liability. And I agree with you. Let me be clear on this.
I don't necessarily even think it's necessarily a bad thing.
No, I know. Exactly. Within the virtue is the weakness and vice versa, right? This is, and where the balance lies, we are going to find out, I think, in the next 6 months, maybe year and a half with Jurgen Klopp. I think he should have gone into the market. I think he should have thought, but did he think it hard enough? But and does that also extend to the way he looks at tactics? Does he consider 3-5-2s? Does he consider maybe playing with an orthodox big man up front? To what extent are these things crossing his mind? I don't know. the press and certain commentators said he's not enough of a, to use the cliche, a tinker man, Jürgen. And I think we just want to see action, remedy action, visible action. Well, maybe these, look, I don't want to get pushed into the one defending him in the room.
No, keep going, keep going. Okay. I agree.
I want to be pushed into the role of just defending the man for the sake of it, but I do give him the benefit of a lot of doubt because of his CV and because of how much I've admired him up till a month ago, unequivocally in my mind. I think 95% of Liverpool sport would have said that. So I have to say, now say he's not suddenly an idiot. He's not suddenly blind. He's not suddenly so rigid he can't see that some flexibility would help. So what else? Why is he doing this? And what are the nuances here?
And the nuances are the thing that I wanted to get on to talk about, Joel, which is that for all we know, they could have been working on all sorts of stuff between the Chelsea game, or they could have been having conversations about little bits and pieces, nuanced changes. Whereas we, as football supporters, can understand he's made three changes, and it's quite crystal clear as to why he's made three changes to do this. He's gone from 4-3-3 to 4-4-2. We can see that he's put the diamonds in place. Whereas he might be thinking, he might have gone home, but be watching that game going, I've made all sorts of nuanced changes, but these bastards have gone back to doing what we've shown doesn't work. And I think that that's why you end up with the sort of discourse around it that you get, which is that everyone's looking at it going, well, that's what's happening here.
Yeah, and when you are going from just game to game to game, you're not really getting that time on the training ground to implement then changes like what you're saying, going from 4-3-3 to a diamond, or even if you went back to 4-2-3-1, you're looking at your systems and you're trying to get them to play in a different way, and then if it's not working, the whole thing falls down. And I think what I give him credit for is the squad that he's had since the start of the season. He's worked with, he's done his utmost to get the best out of them that he can. And so at one point it looked as if he was working a miracle. He was all second in the table, 5-6 points behind Chelsea. But all of a sudden now, maybe the harsh realities are coming to the fore, that maybe we have only got, similar to the Rodgers season when we finished second, we've only got maybe 12, 13, 14 players who he can trust to get out of. And then when they're not performing, there's no one else to come in and challenge them for their places.
Well, the squad suddenly feels a bit weaker, doesn't it? I mean, there's no guy going for, you know, who are your whole sacred cows now?
But the other side of that though is, and this is the thing, Paul, which you were trying to drive at before, why I wanted to hold back the case for criticism is, it, you know, we can make all the points that we've just made. The converse is, the subs aren't changing it. The subs aren't getting better. If anything, we can look back at the last month and pick a couple of games where, if anything, the subs have made things worse.
Yeah, and, you know, even in the Chelsea game, when we took Coutinho off for Mane, it almost stops the rhythm that we seem to have in that game, you know. And he's been frustrating at times with substitutions, Klopp, but I don't want to get on his back at the same time. There's a collective responsibility to put things right, obviously, but I think he's got conviction in his beliefs, hasn't he, where he goes, you're my boys, and he's drilled this into them that, you know, I believe in you guys, and whether he truthfully believes in Adam Lallana for his whole tenure in that position in midfield, or James Milner at left-back, blah, blah, or even Divock Origi, you can come and make a difference off the bench. It's like the thing that gets levelled at Guardiola when he was struggling. He goes, well, what's your plan B, Pep? And he goes, I'm not prepared to go to plan B. You know, I've won 27 trophies using plan A. This is my plan A. It's plan A or plan A for me.
Is there a problem, though, when it looks like his players, for Klopp, I'm not talking about Guardiola, where his players are doing things that could be, that are plan B-ish. So I'm talking about the way in which you're putting the ball in the box. You either stop them from lumping the ball 32 times into the opposition area, into the box, or you say, well, if that's what you're going to do, this is how we're going to make the best of it.
Or don't do them things that aren't manager's orders to start with.
That's what I mean. So either stop the crosses or say, well, he's going to cross it anyway, so we might as well have someone who can nod them in.
I agree with you, Neil, to be honest. I don't think Klopp wants him to be putting crosses in 32 times. I think Klopp would rather play within the width of the 18-yard box and pass it round their midfield and then attack the defence. I don't think he wants him to be playing where Jordan Ibe would be getting chalk on his boots, otherwise he wouldn't have sold him. You know, that it's that sort of thing. He doesn't want wingers in that sense. He wants inside forwards.
The one open criticism I heard quite a lot on Saturday in the UAM was the timing of the substitutions or when they're happening. So, like, for example, against Chelsea last week, he comes on around 89th minute, did he?
Yeah.
Saturday, although they come on a bit sooner, it's still not, in some fans' eyes, quick enough. And that's the one thing, that's the only weakness that I, well, when I say weakness, that's the only criticism I have of Klopp at times, is maybe he's a bit too late in terms of changing things or what. Who knows?
Do you know what I think? I've mulled on this one. I think as long as I can remember watching football, they always seem to do it too late. Every manager. I mean, Rafa did my head in. I mean, then people eventually went, oh, it's always the 68th minute or the 72nd minute. And it always seemed a good 10 minutes slower than it needed to be. And you think, come on, get the idiot on the pitch. The only thing I do look for in a manager, and I'll defend Klopp on this one, is he has shown the courage to throw one on at half time once in a while when it's absolutely rank and go, yeah, do that. I do agree with you. I think, not so much his first sub, his second sub seems to me too late at time. But again, they all do it, so they must have some meeting where they agree on these things. I'm beyond actually almost getting aerated about it anymore. I think your point, Neil, about the crossing, though, what I think that's a consequence of, because I think the manager must say, I don't think he can go to them, don't put air on it. I think what he's saying is, I want us to develop a situation where that's not even an option for you. What I think's happening is, they're getting bogged down in the middle, they're looking for space anywhere they can find it, they panic, they see Klein with chalk on his boots, so someone does a 30-yard crossfield ball, it's to Klein, he's there, everyone else is 20 yards away, so not joining in, and he goes, what the fuck am I meant to do? There's two men about to close me down. And the only thing he can do is put air on it and go above the lads who are running at him. And that's the problem. And it's the fact that in the build up, the situation is emerging, so he doesn't have option.
Okay, before I go on to a couple of questions, I may begin to sum this up. Paul, any bright spots from the game?
I thought Henderson was his normal self, to be honest. I don't think, and people might disagree with me, I don't think he's really at the scene of the crime, even recently, you know, in other poor performances. I don't think he's necessarily a problem. I think he keeps at his job. I think he puts some lovely passes out wide the other day. He's switching the ball well, and he's sort of doing his job while there's, you know, other things on fire around him. I don't think he's to blame. I think Mane, he looked most likely. Is that the compliment you can sort of give him coming out of that game? I'm struggling.
Joel, any additional bright spots from you?
Non-football and the plus getting back into Liverpool just after 7 o'clock. That we didn't get that.
Well, that's quite the flyer, that Joel is,
and
right?
That was being on a coach as well, but no, sticking to the game. I'll be honest, no.
Rob?
Because we were all the players,
the players, I agree with Paul. I thought Jordan Henderson was good. I mean, me and Paul, we didn't sit together in the game. But I was nudging, me and my Raffy were watching it together, and he was slagging off everyone. I was nudging him.
It's very important.
He was very angry. I thought Henderson was great, and I thought, and I agree, Mane in a difficult game where there was nothing down for him looked potent. The only other highlight of the game, I suppose, is the fact that it was so very shit that you're hopeful maybe it's something of a nadir, and that you hear after the game, you yelled at them properly in the dressing room, and that maybe there's another chance at a turning point. And you look at the symmetry, and you know, it's in a different part of the season, in a different season, in 13-14, where we're desperate at a hole, and it proves some sort of a war watershed, but we'll see.
Other things just before we sum up then, which we haven't addressed as we've gone, I ended this with a few questions. The one is, Rob.
Yeah.
It's now quite I'm trying the right way to phrase it. For instance, 08-09, Liverpool do really, really well against the near rivals, and they only lose two games all year, but they drop a few points and draws and things like that. But what they don't have is this unbelievable difference in the ability to impose themselves between these games. The fact that we can completely, for long periods, impose ourselves on Chelsea, make them do what we want to do, play to their level, consistently up the intensity so they've got a match, versus this complete inability to effectively impose ourselves on Hull and Swansea as two recent examples. It's one of the strangest things I've seen from a football team, to be honest with you. It's one thing to say, well, you're only good against the big teams. This isn't like an old-style Liverpool only being good against the big teams for me. This is just simply, for instance, who they are. When we go to United and get wins at United, we do it through sitting back, playing passive football, winning our individual battles, getting it long, and nicking one. Whereas, you know, you look at some that we've gone and scored four at Arsenal.
And we're not just being roused by the cop at home.
Yeah. Instead, it is that we're able to completely impose on very, very good teams and make them at the very least matches and go to a level that they're not at all comfortable with. Every side in the top six who's played us this season has had to go to a level they can't live with. Whereas Hull, Swansea, it was a walk in the park for their lads far too much at times, and there's just no imposition.
Yeah, well, you feel this Liverpool team has modes. I mean, you talk about those other Liverpool sides that might have had good results against big teams. They didn't go to Man City, where Man City are at their absolute best, and absolutely murder them on their own ground. Just or do to what we did to Arsenal, going 4-1 up at the Emirates within an hour. We didn't. None of those Liverpool sides did that. Not even the best of them you can call before here now. Maybe at times only the Brendan Rodgers team at its best. And even then, not as much away as we're seeing with this side. But then again, this I've not seen a Liverpool side in almost living memory do to the little teams quite what this Liverpool team was doing to the little teams. It had a mode where we go, do you know what? I thought this is the first time I've seen a Liverpool team consistently lick the problem of facing the bus parkers. In fact, the mantra before Christmas was, park your bus. This is what we want. Like to use the analogy with Alex Ferguson's size. Brilliant. Go as deep as you like. That's only better for us. So we play against so team wants to come out at us, brilliant, we'll beat you with our intensity and our counter-attacking. You want to sit deep against us, fine, we'll take all the time in the world to pick you apart and murder you. But we had those modes and those two complementary modes ready to win the league with those modes. But in the latter case especially, we seem to have forgotten how to do it. And it's really, really hard to fathom how. And I can see why the manager must be at his wits' end going, why have they just forgot? Maybe a lot of it was to do with rhythm. Because when we had Firmino, Coutinho and Mane in tandem, there was something, you know, they were in perfect synchronicity there. It was superb. I knew you said liquid football. It was superb football. But we had one, two, three of those elements taken out at a time, and we never seemed to have recaptured that rhythm.
OK, next one. Joel. More of a statement, really, but feel free to cut loose. The pressure's going to come on the ownership here quickly.
I think it is, and before I get into it, one statistic for me is telling, and it's not just on their owners, but even the previous ownership. In the last 10 years, we've won one trophy now. Mm. One trophy in the last 10 years. You know, my fear is that we've stopped getting into the habit of winning trophies, whether it was a long time ago or even recently now. We haven't even won one in the past 5 years.
And that's the League Cup. Yeah. It's not even the FA Cup, you know.
The League Cup. We've won the same amount of trophies as the likes of Wigan, Portsmouth, Birmingham, Swansea. They've all at least won a pot. That's the level at, in terms of trophy winning, we're at the moment. And if we don't get in the top four this season, then, the pressure's going to come onto them. And then it's like, well, what's the plan now, lads? Where do we go from here? You know, are you going to throw more money at it? Or are you going to stick to your plan of buying young players with the potential of reselling them on and waiting for the TV money to come in and just seeing what happens? You know, at the minute, it has got that really fine edge to it where it could either go one way or the other.
Go on.
Stone silence.
Yeah, it's hard. The one thing I'd say about the owners, I didn't hear anything being said about them when we were ripping sides apart earlier on in the season. It's not fair to lose a couple of games and all of a sudden completely lose your shit about their ownership.
I want to disagree, Paul. Can I? Because well, I tell you,
let me say why. Then. I just think their big signing of their tenureship is the manager, and I think they need to back the manager to the hilt. But the manager also needs to be willing to spend or demand some of their money. If Benitez is a politician and we knew what was going on inside the club at the time then, if there's a problem and Klopp's keeping that close to his chest, then that for me is not right. I don't think this is a budget thing with Klopp. I think Klopp could have spent more money in the summer if he'd have wanted to, and I think he could have spent money in January if he wanted to. He basically didn't touch a transfer budget, and when he came into the club, he made out like he was backed. I still think he is backed, and I think there's money there to spend if he wants to.
I think the smart artery around FFP. That's what I think, which I'm fine with, by the way. I think that it wouldn't surprise me if Klopp's trying to do it, trying to get into the Champions League in one season without spending, so that because they take it in 3-year chunks, what that means is he might be thinking, well, when we get in the Champions League, then I'll hit it hard.
Yeah,
I'll have 2 years money in one. It wouldn't surprise me because that's an FFP thing. It's not even an ownership thing. It's because, you know, we've been threatened. We've had UEFA go over the books. Other people are being fined. Chelsea have got a million workarounds. We don't seem to have. Maybe we should. But you know, I wonder if there's a bit of FFP thinking going on. Joel's nodding at me.
At least they're not putting us under any financial pressure and spending the money they haven't got. That's one thing I'll tip my hat to them. But there's just other things that I think perhaps maybe they can be held to account over, and by the end of the season, that's when I think we should.
We said in one of the transfer scotta shows at the end of the summer that, and we'd started the season quite brightly at that stage, we're three or four games in, that this is all very well, but if we're not in the top four come March, April, and now that's starting to look a risk, it is going to come back on the ownership, because we had got through that summer with a negative net spend. Now, you can argue that the manager was fully complicit in that, but at the end of the day, the manager is an employee of the club. Some managers will kick and scream all the way and want more and more money, and sometimes they're right to do that, and sometimes they're just hiding from their own inadequacies in doing that. Other managers, I think, and I'd put Klopp maybe in the Wenger category, they will spend money, but there's almost a part within their philosophy that wants to put the blinkers on with money and not want it to be about the money. One, because maybe aesthetically they don't like it. They want to be better than that. But I don't think they're even that. I think it's more subconscious in their minds. They want to go, I want to identify footballers I want to work with. And that's why Klopp stresses. They're going to have this attitude, that attitude. They want to come if they want to play in the Champions League. Those are the biggest things. So he almost wants blinkers on with money. And the minute money becomes a blocking obstacle to something happening, he goes, fine, I don't want to know. Money, you're too ugly for me. And in a way, it needs, I think, a strong football director to go, God bless you, Jürgen, and you know, the owners will be the first to pat you on the back, but we need to go that bit further. You need a bit more help. I'm going to do it for you.
Do you think we lost you talk about money not being available, but if you're in the conversation for Draxler in January, which we've admitted we are, money's clearly available. He's £40 million ish, isn't he? Yep. Draxler, when he goes, so there's £40 million there that he could have spent. It sounds like the bid's been made and he's gone to PSG because PSG could well possibly win the Champions League this year, even though he's going to have to go and play in France. But that surely can't be an ownership thing just because he chooses not to go and spend it on a target he may not fancy. If Draxler's purchased, FSG have signed a cheque, that's my defence of them.
And they were trying to buy Dembele last summer. Okay, yeah. And Goethe as well. Don't really want to bang on long on that one, merely pointing out that it's going to be an ongoing issue. Thank you very much to Rob, even though we had to shout at each other. To Joel. Yeah, it happens quite a lot. It happens in real life, don't worry. To Joel, to Paul. It's just an example of how both Rob and I can get exasperated with each other. To Joel and to Paul as well. Liverpool went to Hull City. Lots and lots of people talk about Liverpool's fluidity. Against Hull City, Liverpool were as fluid as cabbage. Sports Social Podcast Network.